Welcome to Sounds Like Lunch. Joe and I have come to the south of Norway, to the city of Kristiansand, for the annual Punkt Festival. It's a festival characterised by the live remix concept, and its directors, Jan Bang and Erik Honoré, are magnets for an international gathering of creativity. The city is right on the rocky coastline with a harbour for small fishing boats and huge cruise ships. And that's appropriate for my lunch guest, Jana Vinderen, for whom the ocean is home. Her underwater artistry as a sound recordist and her background in marine biology, making her a gatherer of mysterious and beguiling sounds. We talked about those sounds, the hazards of recording underwater, and about cod, which wasn't on the hotel's lunch menu.
Jan, it's great to catch up with you here at the Punkt Festival in Kristiansand at last. So much of your work is to do with the oceans and this wonderful life that goes on there, a life that most of us don't know about. And I wonder, what inspires you to be this artist concerned with the depths?
It could be either I hear from somebody that this is this great sound, like for example of the icebergs that moved in Greenland. It was a friend of mine was telling me about it, and I thought, I just have to go there. So I collect money and did. And it was fantastic, and that kind of started off the new project. And other times, for example, I read about the flame shell reefs in Scotland, and I traveled up there in connection with a workshop that I was doing with music students in Glasgow.
So how did you get into this in the first place? Because it's very much about the sounds that most of us don't hear, this intriguing world. But there's a massive environmental issue here as well, of course.
I think that, you know, that's been all my life, I would say. I grew up by a lake, the largest lake in Norway, Mjøsa. And at that point in the 70s, it was like really bad in terms of algae growth. And I was very occupied with that as a child. This has been the kind of going through all the whole of my life, the interest of the underwater. And also, I'm intrigued by all the stuff we don't know. You know, and of course, deep underwater, we know so little about what's happening there. And we know also very little about the sound scapes underwater, you know, and how the different creatures are, you know, orientating themselves.
Is it about explaining mysteries, and do we need to have those mysteries explained?
Well, to me, I really want to keep that mystery. So I'm never really sure 100% what species it is, for example. I would never take a fish out of the water and put it in a tank and then put a hydrophone and listen to what it sounds like. Because I think sound is also so open, and I like to keep that openness. If I was working within science, I would have to come up with more precise answers. But now I can kind of keep the wonder and hopefully inspire somebody by that, that they want to go and investigate more.
Different parts of the world must bring many different sounds. It must be fascinating to go to lots of different places, as you were saying, the icebergs, the glaciers, different species in different parts of the world. What have you learnt yourself in your travels?
I think when I was in the Caribbean, in the warmer waters, that's a totally new world for me. I've seen, you know, reef fish, and I've seen coral on photographs, but to actually swim amongst it just gives you a totally different perspective on how it all connects up, you know. I mean, for example, how the reef is important, also in relation to the mangroves, you know, the forest around the islands there, and it's essential for me to actually go there and listen to the local people.
I'm intrigued to know what some of the fish sound like, because there's a whole symphony going on underneath the water. What do the fish that we think we know, what do they sound like?
I mean, cod, for example, is still for me the one that has most different sounds, and I mean, it's a very familiar fish to us here in Norway, of course. And when it comes into spawn, it has a sort of low grunting sound. And it even also has this kind of sound when it's mating, when it's in the act of mating and it spirals up together with a female. It makes this kind of low rumble sound. And I have recorded that. It's fantastic. It's really beautiful. But of course, they don't have so much tonal singing like we know from whales, for humpback whales, for example. They have a much more diverse song. But for example, the toadfish, they have different tones, so they will sound like rrr. They find good acoustic places, and then they protect their habitats. So they're kind of all around the reefs. This is a reef fish, but it's invisible, but it's very audible.
So I guess there's a lot to learn about how the fish need to communicate with each other through the barriers of other sounds as well.
Yes, I mean, there is a general sound. There is a clicking, almost sounds like fire and wood, which comes from many different species. And I think the main source of that sound is different species cracking shells when they're eating. And I've not quite been able to identify exactly which species is producing all this sound, but I think it's different ones together. So it's difficult to separate out. I have become, by experience now, able to hear what is a fish and what is just some kind of mechanical sound. And I can hear if there's a new one, I can recognize something I heard before. But of course, I talk with local people, where is it likely to be fish, different species? I remember we were sitting for like hours and hours and hours waiting for a blue whale that we knew were up on the coast by Iceland. We heard it once. But then we were like 10 days listening, and we never heard it again. But I have this like, wonderful like this recording of this blue whale, sort of, ooh, this sort of low frequencies that goes into almost inaudible for us frequencies, you know, low frequencies. So fantastic.
Have you ever been afraid? Have you ever felt really in danger?
I think out in the Barents Sea, I was with the Marine Institute's research boat, and it was like dark night, and it was slipping floor, it was like freezing, it was minus 15, I think. And just to look out into that black void, I knew if I just slept now, you would be so dead out there. But the strange thing is that I don't really feel scared. I feel more at home out in nature. It's hard to explain, but it's a calm feeling. I always feel safe, but I have a lot of respect of nature. I've been hanging in crevasses in glaciers and see things dropping down, and so I haven't been like really scared. Yeah, sometimes I ask myself why I should be scared now, actually.
One of the problems when we're out recording is it's impossible to find anywhere where there is silence. Is it the same underwater?
Underwater, it's a huge problem with motor noise. I have to be out 3 or 4 o'clock. It's very difficult to find a place without any motor noise. I mean, in Norway now, there's so many small boats, so it's impossible to record here in the summer, for example. I think the most quieter place was in the Caribbean because it's so shallow and people can't actually afford to have boats for fun. So you have this one or two fishing boats and they go off and they're fishing.
We know a lot of your work through recordings on the Touch label, which are sort of beautifully crafted and packaged and have opened up worlds for us to listen to your work. What else do you do with the recordings that you've made?
I do installations. Recently, I did an installation in Park Avenue Tunnel in collaboration with Tony Myatt, that we were making these sort of 8 areas you could go through of compositions from underwater. And I think it was something like 18,000 people through the tunnel. also in museums. I've done multi-channel installations because I like to work with three-dimensional sound, that you are kind of getting submerged in the sound. And the good thing about an installation is that the audience can spend as long time as they want and come back, which will be different than a concert situation, which has a beginning and end.
So did you train as a musician or a scientist? How did this all begin?
No, I wanted to become a marine biologist, so I studied science for about 4 years. But then I studied visual art in London. But I decided, I think we surround ourselves with too much things and stuff. So I wanted to work with a material that is not taking up any space, but still very physical. And I see sound as, you know, it's all around us, and it can be very physical, and it's open. But I'm not trained as a composer or anything like this. I'm not claiming to be one, you know. But within an installation, for example, there are spatial compositions and visual in deep in the forest in Russia.
A tiny insect.
It's a really, really tiny insect. They like millimeters big, you know, and you can almost not see them. They use stridulation. They rub body parts together, as, you know, grasshoppers do. But they're unfunny because they're so small and so loud. But of course, every new recording trip, there is something unexpected. So it's really hard for me to say this is the most beautiful sound. I mean, it keeps coming, you know.
Jana, thanks so much. I think we should get on with our lunch now.
Yep.
Intrepid underwater sound recordist and artist Jana Vinderen, my guest on Sounds Like Lunch. Sound was by Joe Hutton, and we were at the Punkt Festival in Kristiansand, Norway. You can find Jana's recordings on the Touch label, and their website and Jana's own, of course, are well worth exploring. The extracts we used there were from Jana's own recording archive. I'm Fiona Talkington. Thanks for joining me. I look forward to our next lunch date.